Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello there, welcome to a brand new Arsblog Arscast right here on arsblog.com. I hope you're well. It is the very first one of 2011, and no doubt I find you at this moment in time up to your neck in your New Year's resolutions, the fitness regimes, putting the debauchery of the festive season behind you, getting rid of those few extra pounds that have been packed on with the booze and the drink and the drink and the booze and the booze and the drinking and the cake and the sweets and crisps and turkey and everything else. January will be a good month. It will be. And it's been good so far, 2011, for Arsenal, hasn't it? Unbeaten, yet to concede a goal. Start as you mean to go on, as they say. And should we continue in the same vein, I predict, quite confidently, a rather happy end to the season. Unless, of course, we draw every game nil-nil between now and May. Even then, you could draw every game nil-nil and still win the Champions League, couldn't you? Provided you were good at penalty shootouts. Can't see that happening. Not everyone plays like Manchester City, do they? Coming up on this week's show, I'll be chatting to Good Player about all the bits and pieces that have been going on. Internet Joe will be along. We've got Talk Shite Radio. And we'll be looking ahead to the Cup games in the Carling Cup against Ipswich. And, of course, in the FA Cup against filthy, nasty, despicable, horrendous, awful Leeds. If you don't know why Leeds are filthy, despicable, horrendous, nasty and awful, I'll explain it to you a bit later on, but surely you know already why that is. It's because, well, they're Leeds. So, since we last spoke, the year has gone well. As I said, New Year's Day, a trip to Birmingham away, a place where we've conceded last-minute equalisers and last-minute goals rather too often, and a place which holds some bad memories, of course, because of the Eduardo incident and the fallout from that game and everything else, you know, that season when we should have been champions but weren't. So, New Year's Day, you're thinking, well, I've got a bit of a hangover, this could go badly. It didn't go badly. Birmingham were a bit rough. They were. I thought the tackle on Cesc, having seen it again a couple of times on replays, was bad. Roger Johnson, a name which really doesn't conjure up a footballer, does it? No, Roger Johnson is an alcoholic solicitor or a tiling expert. Need your bathroom tiled? Call to Roger Johnson's Tiles. Anyway, he was to get some back in the shape of the own goal, but we did extremely well, I thought, overall. Played good football, bit of luck on the first goal. Perhaps wasn't a free kick. Perhaps. But it definitely hit Bowyer's hand on the way through, so if it didn't go in, it should have been a penalty. And, of course, Birmingham were looking for their own penalty with a handball on Robin van Persie, and, you know, you've seen them given. The ball hits the hand. But by that rationale, Arsenal should have had a penalty against Manchester City the other night. Company had his hand sort of there, and it just sort of hit it. And Van Persie was trying to head the ball, and he missed the ball, and it just sort of landed on his arm. It wasn't that he gave it a good swat away. And when things were getting a little bit dodgy, Nasri popped up with a brilliant second goal, and then Fabregas and Nasri interchanging, intertwining, bamboozling the Birmingham defence, and making them look like the big, slow, useless, clogging cunts that they are. People say Birmingham don't lose an awful lot of games at home. I would have to ask why. How is that possible? Because they were pretty terrible. Maybe they gave it everything they got against Manchester United, but they were shite, let's face it. Lee Bowyer stamping on Sanya, raking his studs down Sanya's Achilles. You expect nothing less from Lee Bowyer because he is simply Lee Bowyer, and he gets a three-match ban on the back of that. Rather ironically, Sanya's got a three-match ban after the Man City game for a little bit of rutting, you might say, with Zabaleta, and I don't think we can complain too much about that. And of course, there was the TV coverage, ESPN, which I have cancelled in the meantime because I watched the game on ESPN. I had to sit there and listen to John Champion, who is probably the most snide, pass remarkable commentator that there is. I don't like many of them. Most of them annoy me, but Champion in particular always seems to be looking for an angle, and it's not just Arsenal, I have to say. I'm not just doing this with my Arsenal hat on, because I've heard him commentate on other games, and it's like, oh, geez, if I was a fan of that team, I'd want to kill him. But Chris Waddle, who cannot speak English, and as someone who has a bit of a background in broadcasting and still works within that industry a little bit, it offends me to hear somebody who cannot speak English. Now, I don't expect them all to be like Brian Sewell, for example, speaking plummily and pronouncing words and using a vocabulary beyond the reach of the common man, but I do expect a pundit being paid money by a broadcasting organisation to be able to speak in the correct tense. Right? I also expect him to be able to pronounce simple words, like penalty. Not penalty, penalty. And I don't think it's unfair to expect a broadcaster to have certain standards. And ESPN don't have those standards, and didn't have those standards, so I rang them up and I cancelled. And that's that. I didn't get a chance to tell them why I was going to cancel, because I rang up, and you have to ring up Sky, and I rang up and the guy said, yeah, hello, welcome to Sky, and I said, I'd like to cancel ESPN, please, and I was expecting one of those, well, why are you going to cancel? Is there anything we can do? We'll give you it for half price. And he goes, yeah, all right, no problem, right, it's cancelled. So I didn't get a chance to tell them why I was cancelling, but I did put it on Twitter, and maybe I'll write them a letter and tell them. Dear ESPN, you are now slightly poorer this week because I cancelled because of Chris Waddle. And maybe when you get some people back who can speak English, then I might subscribe again. But I don't think I want to pay any money to an organisation that will have Chris Waddle as a pundit. And I know it opens up a can of worms because there's so many other desperate pundits. I know Jamie Redknapp, he's another one who can't speak in the correct tense. And it does open up a can of worms. But, you know, little steps, little fights, one at a time. Don't have me take them all on at once. I am only one man. Anyway, Man City. There's a lot to come on the Man City game in a few moments' time when I talk to a good player. But now, here's Internet Joe.
I'm Internet Joe, and here's me 30-second roundup. Birmingham away, leg-breaking snark rockets, Van Persie free kick, get in there, need that second, here it is, no, here it is, no, here it is, no, here it is, yes, Nasri, on goal, and Lee Bowyer, I might get a dog to fuck you, just so I can say I got a dog to fuck you, Man City, post, save.
More from Internet Joe on next week's Arsecast. Still to come, Talk Shite Radio, as well as a look ahead to the FA Cup and Carling Cup games and some of the team news involved in that. Right now, though, to talk about all the bits and pieces that have gone on, I'm delighted to welcome back to the Arsecast good player. Happy New Year to you.
And to you.
Let's start with Manchester City. 0-0, frustrating in terms of the result, not so much the Arsenal performance, which I think was... which was more than fine, given the way that City played. And, you know, we've gone through four games in 10 days as well as Manchester City. They're not the only ones who are tired. How did you view the game and City's approach? Because obviously a lot of people have been talking about it. And on one hand, you've got people who say, well, you know, they're perfectly entitled to come and play defensively. Then there's the other side of it where they spend so much money and they're so rich and they've got so many attacking players and such a big squad that it was perhaps a little ambitionless of them to come and play as negatively as they did.
I quite agree. The interesting thing was that they came to the Emirates last season, the penultimate game, I think, and were just incredibly unambitious against an Arsenal side that were probably there for the taking.
And at that time, they needed the points to make sure of Champions League football.
Well, they didn't. They seemed to have this really... They did, but they seemed to have this really kind of cocky assumption that somehow it would all pan out okay. They'd get something or probably beat Tottenham at home, and it would all be fine. And I remember at the end of the game at the Emirates, they were all celebrating with their fans and everything. And I wrote after that game that, much as it pained me to say, if there was any justice, Tottenham would get the Champions League spot because City had lost fewer games than United at that stage and were still 16 points behind them. And I think you can apply that kind of rule of thumb to this season to an extent. You stay up by drawing games you might lose. You win the title by winning games you might otherwise draw. And I'd even have a bit more respect for them had they actually put in a masterful defensive performance last night. I mean, you've got Kolo Touré coming out saying, oh, it's all about defence, blah, blah, blah. Let's be honest here. They didn't actually do that very well. You know, but if we'd had a bit of luck and finished maybe slightly better like we did against Chelsea, we would have blown them away in that first half. I mean, you know, Jack Wilshere is a very good player, and frankly, I don't know what he was doing with that early chance. And we don't hit the post twice. Hart was nowhere near either of them, and so I'd have a bit more respect. I mean, Newcastle didn't do a hell of a lot at the Emirates when they came. They got one goal, but they did defend very well. West City last night, there were moments like we took a short corner. They'd only sent one guy across, which is a cardinal sin, but we messed it up, got another corner, and again they left one guy across. And Cesc and Van Persie swap passes. Van Persie waltzed into the box. Should have done a lot better, but that was a frustrating thing. I didn't even think they did what they tried to do that well.
And it is curious, you know, because we're looking at second against third in the Premier League, and you're expecting at least at that end of the table both teams to try and win the game. And you can understand if you're away, you might play a little bit more cautiously, but you know your entire game plan isn't about sitting back. And perhaps from a fan's point of view, from a City's fan point of view, you know, they can look and say we've come a long way in a short period of time, and we're not necessarily used to playing these kind of games. But when you go out and you buy the Tevezes of this world, and you're spending £16 million on a player like De Jong when you could have picked him up in the summer for free, you know, this sort of thing. When you spend the money, there, I think not necessarily an amount of responsibility, but surely you've got to be a little more expansive than that.
Well, I quite agree. You really do. There's the rule of Allardyce to remember as well, which is that Sam Allardyce has been sacked from two jobs principally because he plays really bad football, you know, and it'd be something that Mancini would be well to be aware of. Because if you look at Allardyce, he wasn't doing terribly at Blackburn, and he wasn't even doing that terribly at Newcastle, where he got sacked from very, very quickly. But the problem is that when you're playing terribly but playing decent football, you know, you've got a little bit of a get-out clause. When you're playing terribly, when you're playing badly and you're playing terrible football, you know, there's not a whole lot of sympathy. And you know, it was interesting hearing when Allardyce got sacked, a reporter up there saying, well, to be honest, half the people here, you know, are astonished he's been sacked because, you know, Blackburn haven't been doing that badly, and the other half is utterly bored and thoroughly delighted. And, you know, and I think it's a lesson that Mancini would do well to heed, and I agree with you. I think it's not the way you win the title. There was one team smiling last night, and that was Manchester United.
It'll be interesting as well. It will be interesting to see how City are going to develop this project, because obviously, you know, there was a bit of, when Hughes was there, they said, look, Hughes is not the guy to win us a title. Maybe Mancini's the guy to take us to the next level. And I suppose if they do have any ambition in the longer term, it might well be a case that Mancini is a stepping stone to a manager who can bring them success and decent football. We'll have to wait and see how that goes. Was tiredness a factor for Arsenal in the second half? Because Mancini was complaining his team was tired, and we're at the end of the Christmas schedule, and I suppose these guys have played three out of the four games in the last 10 days. Certainly the first half we created a lot more, and the second half seemed to struggle to sort of get behind City the way we did in the first.
Yeah, I think there's definitely some merit in saying that. I also think if you look at it, Arsenal were at their traditionally very, very strong finishes to the game. But I don't think the substitutions last night made a lot of sense, really. I mean, he took Walcott off against Chelsea with 20 minutes left, and you know, you could almost see the smile on Ashley Cole's face from where I was sitting on the other side of the ground. I mean, you know, it's and I thought that was a strange substitution. I said immediately we're going to struggle. You know, we're not going to create a lot in the last 20, and sure enough, we didn't. And so yeah, I think you level tiredness at it. You level the fact that maybe they'd managed to get a grip a little bit. You know, they were a lot of stoppages in play that they were seemed to tactically suit them at the right time. And our shape, you know, we did exceptionally well in the first half, really, actually, to create so many chances against a team who have good defenders, have good midfielders, and were so determined to defend.
What about the sendings off? Arsenal are not going to appeal Bakary Sagna's red card. Manchester City are going to appeal the red card for Zabaleta. I was sort of the opinion that given the time of game that it was, the referee might have been a bit more sensible and just dished out a couple of yellow cards and told him to shut up and just get on with it. There's only a minute or two left. But we've seen a few of those head-to-head incidents recently. I think it was Kabul got sent off for Spurs, and Zogbios was maybe a little more head-butty than Sagna. What did you make of it? And particularly in the light of Sagna and Bowyer at Birmingham, because Sagna came under attack almost from Bowyer and didn't react, and something happened over on that far touchline, and Sagna didn't like it at all.
Yeah, I mean, he made a bit of a mug out of me, to be honest, because I've been lauding him on my blog for the way he just doesn't get fazed by anything, doesn't confront anyone about anything. And then he goes and does what he did last night, which was entirely out of character for him and very strange. I can see why, according to the letter of the law, the referee, he could have made that decision, and why we're not appealing it, and we're right not to appeal it. I'd ask one question. You know, the letter of the law is a very funny thing, and I think we just accept it sometimes, you know, kind of without questioning. Was there a 1% chance that either Sanya or the City player could have been injured by what they did last night? No. Mm. Both of them were just specifically not headbutting each other. That much was very clear. But, you know, and he should have given the yellow cards. You know, it was the end of the game. It was a very fair game, really. I can't remember too many bad tackles at all. He should have done that, but you know, unfortunately, referees, there's no common sense, there's no actual thought process in any of the disciplinary stuff. And I think you bring the Bowyer thing in, and I was just astonished, you know, when I read that Lee Bowyer had accepted a 3-match ban. And you accept a knighthood, you accept a role as treasurer at the local church, you don't accept a 3-match ban. And it's like every kind of, basically, you have two kinds of bans in football. You have one for technical offences, i.e. where you're sent off for two yellow cards, or you're sent off for a last man offence, which is a one game ban, and then you have violent conduct. And in 17 years or whatever of the Premiership, I think Ben Thatcher is just about the only player to get anything more than a 3-game ban. Mm. And it just strikes me as bizarre. I mean, you look at, could you imagine if our courts, if every person who came before them for assault or murder, murder's different, but assault or anything, or any kind of affray or anything, it was all, that's just a set of sentence of that amount of time. And it just struck me as there was something very wrong about the Bowyer incident, the way it was kind of just accepted. Oh, yeah, I would have sent him off. You know, that's fine. Yeah, I'll accept the 3-game ban. That's fine. Addison Tisch going, yeah, as long as it's applied to all the teams, da, da, da. Hang on, let's just take a step back from this for a second. A bad tackle is one thing, and I'm not someone who's ever going to defend Shawcross and the likes of him, but you can say that you didn't mean it, and you can also argue that, yes, you were reckless, but you didn't mean to injure the guy. And, you know, it is a defence of sorts. You say, all right, fair enough. But Lee Bowyer has accepted he stamped on Bakary Sanya. Now, when it comes to stamping on someone, it's either a complete accident, which is totally plausible. You can land on someone with your studs completely accidentally. Or you've tried to stamp on them. You've jumped on their legs with your studs. Now, if that happens in the street, you know, you're done for assault.
Yeah.
And where is the kind of outrage about this? I don't quite understand it. You know, I hate it when people say, what kind of a message does it send out? But what kind of a message does it send out?
Well, it's something that's long been a bugbear of mine, because I think it was around the same time as the Shawcross incident that Ali Adier got a 4-match ban. Again, it was one of those, he was sent off for violent conduct, letter of the law. All he did was he lifted his hand and touched a guy on the face. And then appealed, saying, well, come on, you know, let's have a bit of common sense about this. And they banned him for a further game for a frivolous appeal. Because by the letter of the law, if you lift your hands, you know, sort of like Heskey did last night, you're going to get a 3-match ban. But there is, I've long, not campaigned, but long suggested that there has to be a sliding scale of punishment for violent conduct. That some conduct is only violent conduct by the letter of the law, and some violent conduct is actually violent, deliberate, and with intent to hurt a player. So it's like you say, when you go to the court, you know, everybody gets the same, you know, whether it's driving offences or whatever, everyone gets the same punishment. It is weird, but it must take, if you think about it, it must take a huge amount, or would take a huge amount of administration, you know, to make something like that happen. Now, I'm not against that by any means, but
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Perhaps that's where their reluctance to do anything about it comes from.
No, I don't think it does require any administration, really. I think it simply requires their disciplinary panel, which is, already exists, to go, actually, that was pretty bad. We don't really like that. I think, and also to go, I mean, the other thing strikes me about this is that it was Lee Bowyer. I mean, you know, it's not Gal Clichy doing it. It's Lee Bowyer. There is previous, you know. Mm. Let's be honest about this. And yet you don't get any condemnatory words from the FA. You don't get Bowyer forced to kind of come out and say, I'm really sorry about doing that. I realise stamping on someone's leg, jumping on their leg with my studs is a really bad thing to do. I'm really sorry. I won't do it again. He just accepts his three-match ban. I mean,
yeah. All right. Well, let's leave that, because that's a minefield that you know, I don't think we're going to get across at any stage soon. Briefly on the Birmingham performance, it was good. We stood up to the physical stuff, and I think I had some scary moments when we'd missed those couple of chances early in the second half, but Nasri got the second. The third would have been a beautiful goal if an Arsenal player had scored it. So a good display away from home, and one that probably picked us up a bit after the Wigan result.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think we played pretty well. We got the second goal crucially, which was a really important thing, and we did well, especially given the history we've got there. I'd be interested to know what you think. I think that when we've got a combination, when we've got Wilshere-Walcott in the team, it really, really helps us. It gives us something completely different. I'm not saying he's the best player in the squad by any extent, but I just think we look such a better team with him in it, really, and I think that's been quite evident in some of our performances of late.
Yeah, I would agree, because the alternative is so off form and frustrating at the moment, and we're talking about Arshavin being the alternative. I could understand why he brought Arshavin on last night, because maybe you just need that little bit of extra quality, that little bit of extra experience, and that sort of new around the box that Arshavin has that Walcott doesn't, right? Mm-hmm. So I could understand why he brought him on. But what was, I suppose, frustrating was the fact that what Arshavin did was it was sloppy and it was lazy again. And, you know, he really is terribly frustrating at the moment. So if you're asking me in a straight swap between Walcott and Arshavin, then there's no choice just at the moment. But what I would like to see is a little more, I wouldn't like it to be so clear cut. You know, I'd like for there to be a choice between the two of them, and that one is causing the other problems, and perhaps, you know, that competition thing will fire them on. And I agree, you know, Walcott does give us something different and a pace, and it does trouble defenders. I just think that when a team is sitting as deep as City is sitting,
yeah,
you know, there isn't really the great benefit of Walcott's pace that there is against a team that pushes forward a little bit more.
No, maybe. I mean, I thought he was getting in quite a lot last night, you know, even despite how deep they were sitting. And I agree that bringing Arshavin on was the right move, because he is a guy who can snaffle you a goal. I thought what was interesting was when he then brought Bentner on, and he moved Nasri into midfield. Now Nasri had a decent game last night, but I don't think it was his best game. I don't think he was as effective as Walcott. And Nasri got shifted into midfield once Wilshere came off. And a little part of me thought, well, why didn't you take Nasri off in the first place? Is the reason you didn't take Nasri off because you always had this little extra thing in mind of taking Wilshere off? I don't know. I would have liked to see Arshavin one way and Walcott the other. And I think, you know, and if Nasri had to take a bow, then so be it. But, you know, fair enough. I can see where Wenger's coming from.
All right. OK, let's look ahead to the weekend and to next week, because we've got a break from league action, and perhaps that might be a good thing and a chance for people to rest some legs.
Arsenal's already.
Yeah. Well, if you could pick a time for Sanya to be out, you know, the two of his games are missing, the cup games. That's good. He wasn't going to play in them anyway, I don't think. But the manager's already talking about making many, many changes to the teams at the weekend. And it is a chance not only for us to progress in the FA Cup and in the Carling Cup, important games, but again to keep these squad players fresh. And it goes back to the Wigan thing where, people talk about us having a strong bench. But if the players aren't playing, then they don't get any chance to build up match sharpness, to build up any kind of form, any kind of confidence. So it is a chance for these players who have become sort of fringe players, if you like, Rosicki and Bentner, you know, to show that they've got what it takes and to keep them going, because we are going to need them at some point later in the season.
Totally agree. And the great thing is we have very few injuries at the moment, relatively. And we've got plenty of players who can come in. And so what he can do is he can pick a team, which is what he's been doing in the Carling Cup, which is a realistic, tangible team who can win the game for us. And actually, if you look at it, he'll play... He's only the changes he's made in the Carling Cup this season, that everyone goes on about the greatest strength, but actually it's been a slight tweak, because this season, he's picked the seven players who started on the he's always picked the seven players who started on the bench the previous league game, basically. So that's seven out of your starting 11 gone, and then there'll be one or two others, the likes of Vela, etc., you know, maybe someone coming back from injury, who'd make it up to 9 or 10. And then what he's tended to do now is rather than chucking, he might chuck in one rookie, but rather than, chucking two rookies next to each other or something, he might take Fabregas, or he might take Wilshere, or he might take Sanya from the first team and put them in there. So, so that's the slight difference he's made. And it's good that he's made that change, but it's also the fact that we have a much more experienced and fitter, currently fit squad as well. And so I think we can afford to make the changes. You don't want to see changes like Ali Adier being brought in for his first start in 6 months against Man United in the FA Cup semi-final in 2004. And I'm sorry, but that still does really rankle, because that was ours to have, basically. That was a treble for us to have. And still, unbeaten.
Sorry, yes. Have you still got some sentiment, issue. Some feeling for the cup? No, I mean, not issue with that, because that's 2004. We got to move on. Yeah. Do you still have some fondness for the cup? Because a lot of people view it as irrelevant and, it's not really worth talking about anymore. But for me, the first trophy I ever saw Arsenal win was the FA Cup, and it was at that final in 1979, and, it was an amazing game. So for me, it's always been a competition I've been fond of and always want us to do well in.
Oh, definitely. You've got to be fond of it. I'm kind of fond of the Carling Cup as well. I think it gets a bit of a bad press in a way. You get some quite good games in it. And the FA Cup's definitely got a special appeal. And, I think, to be fair to Wenger, we've always largely given it the respect it deserves. In recent years, we haven't done as well as we once did, when we kind of got addicted to it and, almost blasé about it. But I think FA Cup is always a big thing, and it should certainly matter.
All right, okay, good player. We better leave it there. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much.
Cheers to good player. You know where to find him, goodplayer.com or on Twitter, twitter.com/goodplayer. Now, before we look ahead to the weekend's game against Leeds, dirty, nasty, filthy, horrendous, awful, despicable, nasty Leeds, here's some Talkshite Radio.
In motorists around Preston are reporting a huge orange glow in the sky, which is causing some disruption on local routes. Police say this is only to be expected with the arrival of Phil Brown as manager of the football team. We'll have more traffic in an hour.
Thank you very much indeed, sexy Australian traffic girl. This is Talkshite Radio, talking shite about sport 24 hours a day. Don't forget later, our phone-in show with sex pest mentalist and Adrian Spennymoor. Tonight the subject is Marouane Chamakh, striker
or Moroccan hash kingpin using the cover of the Premier League to fence his filthy product. Now, last weekend, Arsenal beat Birmingham 3-0 at St. Andrews. A lot of people have talked about how Arsenal stood up to the physical task of Birmingham, how they put in a good display. But frankly, the thing we should be talking about is the fact that the referee missed a clear penalty, a handball by Robin Van Persie in the box. With me to discuss the game is the man in charge of hiring pundits at ESPN. Welcome.
Good afternoon.
Arsenal might have scored 3 goals, but the turning point was that penalty decision. It wasn't given, and you do get the sense that had it been given, Birmingham would have gone on to score 5 or 6 and win the game quite comfortably.
Yes, as one of our pundits was speakifying on the telly box on Dastoday, how has the referee not saw that? Not only was it a clear penalty, but it was also a band haul. And anyone in the ground who didn't see that band haul and the fact that it was a penalty needs to get their eyes dusted. I honestly think the standards in the Premier League are going to hull in a handbasin.
And that was licensed then for the Arsenal players to go on and do what they do, diving, cheating, scoring goals against the opposition, without a moment's thought for how the home fans must feel.
Quite so, and we should face the fact that they should not like have to be retort to that kind of thing. Look at the players they have. Besk Sagrafas, Samir Katnazri, Bacardi Spagna, Wio Thorcott, Fukus Labianski, Romas Tyskitski, Pobin Van Rersy, all top quality players who have the talent and ability to win any game. To see them do cheatosity like that is a scandal. Personally, I blamed Arwen Senger. He is the manager of the club, and the players clearly act under his instructions.
Well, we're broadly in agreement there. Let's leave Arsenal aside, and before we go, just tell us a few things about how the new year is going to pan out for ESPN.
We have a great many things coming in 2011. We're most excited by our realistic reality show featuring Chris Dordle. Bakersley, we snared him to a remote island, which doesn't even not have not a moat, and flim him as he tries to fight off a series of ever more dangerous animals, including crocodiles, ratantulas, greasily bears, galitators, feligish, and Jade Goody's quim in a jar.
And that is why ESPN has got the very highest standards in broadcasting. Talkshite radio aside, of course, the man who picks the pundits for ESPN, thank you very much. This is Talkshite Radio, talking shite about sport 24 hours a day. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, Tony Pulis on why he is not the Millhouse of football.
Talkshite Radio, talking shite about sport 24 hours a day. 24 hours a day.
So FA Cup action this weekend against Leeds United. We're at home. It's an early enough kickoff, I think 12:45. And we've got a great history with Leeds United in the FA Cup. The last time we played them was in the 2003-2004 season. We beat them 4-1 at Elland Road. The goals from Henri, Edu Pires and Kolo Touré. But the Arsenal team on the day, Lehmann, Lauren, Keown, Campbell, Cole, Ljungberg, Vieira, Gilberto, Edu, Kanu, Henri. Substitutes that came on were Parler, Pires and Touré, and David Bentley stayed on the bench, as did Rami Shaban. Shaban. Never knew how to say that, but never mind. I've covered all the bases there, I think. Anyway, Leeds United in the FA Cup, and they're going well now, Leeds, aren't they? They're doing well in the Championship. This season, they're potentially coming back to the Premier League, which would be, let's face it, awful, because Leeds are, let's face it, cunts. And I'm sure I've told this story before. There's a reason, a particular reason, why I so hate Leeds United. And that was because when I was in school, a young boy, in school in Yorkshire, and there was a Leeds United fan there, and there were in fact a number of Leeds United fans there, but only one of them was a mouth-breathing oaf, like this particular chap, who used to sort of get your arm behind your back and make you say, "I love Leeds," and it hurt a lot, and I'm not one for pain, generally speaking. But I always resented him for that, not so much for the physical pain, because you expect that when you're in school. There's always some cunt who's trying to throw his weight around, but the fact that he made me say, "I love Leeds," when I didn't, of course, I kept my fingers crossed when I said it, so it didn't really count. And I just had a check now on this bizarre creation that is Facebook, and I can see him on Facebook. I'm looking at his profile right now. What a cunt. He's still alive. That disappoints me greatly. I was hoping he had died a miserable, horrible death in a bedsit somewhere, a squat with a needle in his arm and a fucking tramp's cock up his arse. That's what I was hoping. Sadly, it hasn't happened, but he does like Def Leppard, it seems. And what else does he like? Top Gear, The Inbetweeners, Quadrophenia. Yeah, apart from that, there's a whole lot of Leeds stuff as well. So, what a cunt. And hopefully he's making the trip down on Saturday to watch Leeds get beaten at the Emirates. There are going to be a lot of changes for the Arsenal team. Arsene Wenger talking about making many, many changes. We'll see Eboué back, obviously, because Sanya is injured. Chesney's going to play in goal. Kieran Gibbs is fit again, and he'll play. I suppose Skilacci will come back in. Then you're looking at Rosicki, Arshavin, Bentner coming in, Shamak coming in, Danielson, maybe Craig Eastman might play at some point, and maybe one or two of the first team squad that aren't feeling tired. Robin Van Persie is out of the game because he's picked up a little knock on his hip during the Man City game. Samir Nasri, a doubt, and to be honest, I would be inclined to give him a bit of a rest. We've got bigger fish to fry. I do hate Leeds, and I really, really do like the FA Cup, despite what people might think of it as a competition and its importance. It will always have a fairly special place in my heart, and we are Arsenal, and we can't necessarily be picky and choosy in terms of trophies anymore. And that leads us nicely, of course, to Tuesday night's game against... No, it's not Tuesday, it's Wednesday against Ipswich in the Carling Cup, a semi-final, and again you're going to look at the players who played in the FA Cup playing in that game, and as I was saying to good play a bit earlier, as well as giving the first team a break, it's a chance for these guys to say to the manager, look, I'm here, I can be considered for the first team, I can do something when I'm given the chance, because too many of them haven't really done that. Bentner's still got a bit to go this season. Thomas Rosicki, come on Thomas, a goal. He hasn't scored since 1986, and he needs a goal. And there's guys that are pushing and should be pushing for first-team action, and these cup games are very handy for the manager to give them that playing time on the pitch. So, fingers crossed for tomorrow against Leeds. I hope they have a horrendous journey down, a horrendous journey back, and they lose, and that somewhere along the way, the guy that I was in school with ends up in a squat, needle, tram's cock, arse. And on Wednesday, let's hope for more of the same. I mean, in terms of good football results, because he really doesn't need to have the squat, needle, tram's cock, arse. Again, one should be enough, provided it's done properly, if you get me. But I don't bear a grudge, really. Anyway, we better leave it there. Have yourselves a great weekend. Talk to you all next week on the blog, and of course, on next week's Arsecast. Until then, take it easy. Cheers. Bye-bye.
There are often homeless people asking for change at freeway exit ramps, but recently there's been this guy with an interesting sign at I-71 and Hudson Street. His handwritten sign says he has the God-given gift of a great voice.
Hey, I'm going to make you work for your dollar. Say something with that great radio voice.
You're listening to the Arseblog Arsecast.
Are we done, lads, yet? We done enough to give me a dollar, is it? Deadly, yeah. That'll go a long way, so I will, you know. I was born in Brooklyn, raised there, but, you know, the old drink and drugs got hold of me and found myself out on the street. And I've been living here and just, you know, I always figured someone would come along and find me talent, you know. So if you could, chuck that up there on the YouTube, that'd be deadly. Fucking lovely, so I would. But don't worry about me, I'm sober now nearly 2 hours, and everything is peachy. Wouldn't have a smoke, would you? Wouldn't taste that puke. Think there's a big cut between me teeth and everything.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.